The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Thank you, Howard. I hope you guys are doing well and not suffering too much from the winter there. If I could only send you some heat from our heat wave to warm you guys up, then I would gladly do it.
Oh, you don't need to worry about us. It's definitely warming up, and we are 2 days away from spring, so that is very, very, we are very...
Well, that's a very comforting thought.
Yes, we are very, very excited about that. Anthony, there have been further agreements amongst right-wing parties to run together on a joint list in the upcoming general election. What are the latest developments on the political front in Israel?
Okay, so we're going to have to talk a lot about elections. It's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea, and we kind of feel that it's, you know, elections version 2.0, having already had an election earlier this year. But of course, the election is important, and it is potentially going to be very influential in determining Israel's way forward, and in particular what the future of Prime Minister Netanyahu will be. So what's been happening on the right wing of the political spectrum is that Ayelet Shaked has really emerged as the leader of the right wing bloc. We already discussed the fact that she's taken over leadership of the new right party from Naftali Bennett with his agreement, and they have already entered into an arrangement with the old Bayit HaYehudi party, the Jewish Home Party, where they were, which they originally founded actually, and which has come under the leadership now of Rabbi Rafi Peretz. They already entered into an agreement to run with them, and now they have included a further right-wing parties, the National Union, for example, as well as the Otzma Yehudit, the Jewish Power Party, has they've all joined in to the right wing bloc, which they're now calling the United Right. So this is all the right wing parties. It's the Bayit HaYehudi, it's the Yamin HaChadash, it's the Otzma Yehudit, it's the Zuhut Party. All of them are joining into a joint list in order to try to garner as many of the right-wing votes as they possibly can under a combined list. And they feel that they are likely to be able to earn more seats in the Knesset by joining together rather than by the individuals running separately. And there is something to be said for that, because as we will recall, for example, the Yamin HaChadash, the new right party, with Ayelet Shaked and Naftali Bennett, didn't even get a seat in the parliament in the previous elections that were held earlier this year. So if they're all joining together, there is certainly a view that they will do a lot better in a combined fashion than what each of them did individually. But I think what's quite interesting is that they have come out very strongly saying that they will support Prime Minister Netanyahu as the Prime Minister. That's been agreed amongst all the parties. And what's also interesting, of course, is that Ayelet Shaked has first place on the list, so she will be the first person into the Knesset, followed, interestingly, by the Jewish Home Chairman, Rafi Peretz. He has the second position on the list. And third goes to the National Union head, Bezalel Smotrich, who also is a very controversial figure in him and of himself. And fourth place is reserved for Naftali Bennett. So he seems really to have been demoted down the list, down to fourth place, which seems a little bit different than was the situation earlier this year when we had the previous election. I did have an inquiry from Mervyn saying, why is Prime Minister Netanyahu so anti-Ayelet Shaked? Is he afraid of her? Is he afraid of the threat of what she might bring along? And I think that what Prime Minister Netanyahu is trying to do is trying to avoid too many of the Likud voters feeling that they might wish to support the new right-wing bloc. And so also trying to avoid the new right-wing bloc getting too many seats, or certainly too many more seats than what they had before, because this could potentially come at the expense of the Likud. And while he does have an interest to make sure that the right-wing parties are strong, so that, because they are obviously his natural bedmates, his natural coalition partners when that coalition government is formed, he still doesn't want to weaken his own Likud parties position in the next Knesset. And there are indications, at least from the current opinion polls, that the Likud will earn probably less seats than what they managed to get in the previous election. And it doesn't matter who those seats go to. As far as Netanyahu is concerned, that is a bad outcome. He doesn't want that to be the case. Of course, if he had the choice of where those seats would go, he would way prefer them to go to the right wing rather than to the left wing. But even if they go to the right wing, it makes that right wing bloc so much stronger as a coalition partner that it might become very difficult for him to manage a coalition, assuming he's the one who has to put it together. One more interesting little fact is that the new United Right bloc have decided that they're going to promote the so-called Norwegian law, a passage of the so-called Norwegian law. And the Norwegian law says that if a Knesset member is appointed as a minister in the government, then they will be allowed to resign their seat in the Knesset, serve in the government without being a Knesset member, and then allow the next person on the list to effectively get a position in the Knesset, thereby managing somehow to involve more and more people from their party in the runnings of the government, rather than have people occupying seats both as a minister of government as well as a Knesset member. So that seems to be the main thing that they're coming out with at the moment. But I think that overall, this is an interesting development, and it may well weaken the Likud's position in terms of the number of seats that they're able to get in Knesset.
Fascinating indeed. The president of Croatia is in Israel. He's there on an official visit. What's the purpose of her visit?
So this is the president of Croatia. He has a name which is very, very difficult for me to understand, but it's something like President Kolinda Grabar-Kitarovic. And she has met already yesterday with President Rudi Rivlin, already for the third time since the two of them have been presidents of their respective countries. She also had meetings with Prime Minister Netanyahu and with Foreign Minister Yisrael Katz. And there seem to be two main issues on the agenda between Israel and Croatia, besides the fact that, you know, they have a very, very cordial diplomatic relationship, and that Israel and Croatia seem to be cooperating in many, many different fields. And in fact, the meeting that President Kolinda, I'm going to use the word because that's very easy, the meeting that she had with President Rivlin ran to an hour and a half, which seems to be way beyond what the usual protocol is for such meetings, which usually last something less than an hour. So it does give the impression that there is a relatively close relationship between the two of them. But the two main issues on the agenda between Israel and Croatia are, first of all, the whole issue of Croatia's part within the Shoah, within the Holocaust, and how that is currently being marked. And there has been a proposal for some sort of a memorial to be set up in Croatia, in Zagreb, I think, in order to commemorate the victims of the Shoah, and particularly those who came from the Croatian area. But there is a small Jewish community within Croatia, and they are objecting to this memorial being set up because they have the impression that this is a kind of way of Croatia denying to some degree some of the past, and it's kind of just like whitewashing the situation. And so that was certainly a topic of discussion between President Kolinda and the Israeli government officials. But also the main topic of discussion was actually a financial commercial deal where Israel was due to have sold 12 upgraded F-16s to Croatia. And this was towards the end of last year. And Israel had then undertaken and agreed to add some sophisticated technological equipment to these F-16 fighters, bearing in mind that these F-16s, of course, will have been bought at some point in the past from the United States. Israel will have used them and have decided that they're no longer fit for purpose in terms of the Israeli Air Force requirements. But apparently Croatia feels that that would be good enough for them with these upgrades. And so Israel had actually entered into an arrangement to sell these 12 F-16s to Croatia. Unfortunately, the U.S. government had different ideas, and this is, I suppose, typical of President Trump's approach to business, as far as the United States is concerned, because having bought these F-16s from the United States in the past, apparently the U.S. still has the ability to dictate what happens to them in the future, that they're not just simply a situation where you sell the F-16 and go off and the U.S. doesn't have any future involvement, but apparently they still have a in what happens to them even beyond the use by the Israeli Air Force. And the Trump government decided that by Israel giving this upgrade, this technological upgrade, it effectively prevented the United States from selling their own F-16s to Croatia and doing a business deal with Croatia. So the Trump government decided to prevent Israel from doing the upgrade to these F-16s, and in so doing, it actually scuppered the whole deal, such that Israel was unable in the end to agree with Croatia the sale of these airplanes. And it seems as if the Americans then came in and managed to sell the airplanes to Croatia instead. This would have been a $500 million deal for Israel, but unfortunately it fell through. And so President Kalinda simply said that despite the fact that there was this disappointment of the deal not going through, she feels that Israel and Croatia still have a close strategic partnership and a diplomatic relationship. And I think for Israel, it's important that that's the situation.
I think it's actually quite fascinating that that Donald Trump at least is true to his word of putting America first, because that's exactly what he did here.
It's difficult to argue against that, isn't it? It's very difficult to argue against that. And, you know, the problem, of course, is that it also prevents not only Israel from selling the airplanes, which, of course, the Israeli Air Force would have loved to do, but also it also prevents Israeli technology from being used further afield, because by that upgrade being prevented, obviously that technology remains back in Israel rather than being used by the Croatians, which is also unfortunate,
right.
But, you know, it's very difficult for us to argue against Trump's view of trying to promote American business. You know, that's just one of those things.
Finally, international artists have been coming to Israel in spite of BDS attempts to prevent them from performing. Who are the latest artists to appear in Israel, Anthony?
Well, we had John Bon Jovi give an unbelievable concert last week, 45,000 people at Hayarkon Park. And he is always so happy to be in Israel. It's really a pleasure to have somebody like him here. He loves being here. You know, the way that he started his concerts at the beginning was just amazing. You know, we're back and we've got some unfinished business. And, you know, he gave something which apparently was an unbelievable concert. But in particular, of course, Bon Jovi's got the song that he wrote in 2015 that was actually dedicated to Israel. And, of course, he performed the song for the crowd. And, you know, he reminded people that it was, in fact, dedicated to Israel. So this is always something which is very, very special for Israel and for Bon Jovi. And we seem to have a very, very close relationship with him. And not only him, but, of course, Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo, is in town. She is in town. And she's really hit the place a big time. Her concert will be coming up this week as well. She's come with her husband and entourage, lots of details about her concert. So, yeah, some interesting artists over the summer. By the way, the song, I didn't say the song.
Yes, I was just going to say, I'm getting messages, wrote. People asking me, what is the song called?
Okay, the song is called We Don't Run, and it's definitely worth listening to, and it's definitely worth note of the lyrics of the song, right, because I think it's very much true to Israel and what Israel stands for. And it's a great privilege that, you know, an honor that Bon Jovi decided not only to write this song with Israel in mind, but indeed performed it very specially for the crowd last week. And of course, we're looking forward to Jennifer Lopez's concert as well. And indeed, and the others who will be in Israel over the summertime. We're now into the main part of the summer season. You know, the main summer camps and school programs will be finishing up this week. Parents will be taking holidays. And so this is really when the real summer starts, with lots and lots of entertainment and activities, people out and about on their summer vacation. So we're looking forward to that. And, you know, we always talk about the BDS successes and how people decide not to come to Israel. And I think it's important also to talk about where BDS failed to convince people like Jennifer Lopez and John to come to Israel.
Yeah, and so the line hasn't been a great one this morning, and it's in danger of collapsing altogether. It is 8 o'clock. We'll chat to Anthony tomorrow at the same time, same place.